I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
There Will Be Porn is a podcast about pornography. In this episode, instead of talking about adult films, we talk about books written by adult film stars. Despite the fact that we're talking about books, it still gets explicit because we're talking about pornography. So if you have some little baby ears or baby ears in the room that just will collapse under the weight of explicit material, then maybe, I don't know, don't let those ears come into contact with this show. Also, because of the nature of the adult film industry and the sex work industry in the 80s and 90s, the books and the writers in the books and we address some things about sexual assault. And specifically, one of the movies has a pretty graphic scene of sexual assault. So if you're sensitive to that kind of conversation, this is your trigger warning that it will be happening. As much as we want to avoid it, we couldn't seem to avoid it when addressing this topic. Also, after that note, do I even have to tell you not to whip your dick out? Because gross, please. Just listen with one organ. Maybe two. You can use your brain. That's fine.
Oh, yeah. This is There Will Be Porn with Kate and Murda.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to
There Will Be Porn.
As always, I'm your lovely host.
It's Murda.
That's right. It's Murda.
Nothing's changed about that. All the same soundbite.
Yeah.
Still the same blonde
matter what happens to Ja Rule, that's still an interesting soundbite.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's just you now. You've hijacked it.
Ja Rule's career may never be coming back, but
the soundbite lives forever.
But that soundbite lives forever. Yeah. And you're Kate.
And I'm Kate. Yeah. I don't have a soundbite. I don't need one.
Yeah.
I walk in a room and it's like, I just pound my chest.
So you guys might have listened to our second episode, Raw Talent.
Yeah. And if you didn't, go back and listen to it. It was a good one.
Really fun.
Yeah.
It also rocked our world.
Like a lot.
I never thought I was going to learn so much from a porn.
Yeah,
or think so much about a porn or contemplate the issues that they were to actually like present social issues in a porn form is quite unusual.
Yeah.
I've never seen my porn storylines are like, I brought you this thing and don't I look sexy? And like, you're alone. And oh, and my friend's here or my mm-hmm. sister or like, let's get naked and like, let me suck your dick. Like, those are the porns I'm used to.
Right.
And this porn was totally something different.
I don't think I've ever been so emotionally invested in the characters of
yes.
porn.
You seem to have no problem with that.
Nothing. You deserve nothing. You're terrible.
He went to the war and
you.
He knows karate, Caitlin.
I don't care what war he was in. I don't care what karate he knows. He needs to be in jail. He's awful. I have no sympathy for Eddie.
I do want to see Carolyn all the time. And much more.
I want more Carolyn. The first half of this movie was heavy Carolyn. And then something really terrible happened. And now we're just watching Eddie. And I hate him. I hate him so much. This movie was,
I hate you, Eddie. This, I hate you.
I hate you. This movie was well on its way to being one of my favorite porns of all time. And I've never been so disappointed in my life.
He's gonna get it.
This porn is a metaphor for how I feel as a woman. At first, I was, like, really cool with it. I was like, being a lady's great. I talk better than boys. I can spell better than them. I, like, generally
I had
adults
better
are
genitals
nicer
than
to
them.
Me. Yeah, I cool. I liked being a lady, you know, and then I got boobs and I got all this stuff. And then eventually I found out it's rather disappointing. And that's what this movie feels like to me.
Yes. All right. Money shot.
I guess, oh my God. There was one point, I think,
yes,
when we were watching this porn where I think I got out of my chair and laid on the floor.
Yeah.
Cause I was like,
it's all over the place.
Yeah.
It is quite a storyline. And, there was a lot of stakes. A lot of stakes.
So many stakes.
Not meat stakes. I wish there were. There was a turkey.
There was a turkey.
You recall? There was a turkey.
The turkey was the highlight, I think.
Is he going to fuck that turkey? Is he about to fuck a turkey?
No. Oh, my God. He does fuck the turkey. I can't believe it. I can't believe he's fucking the turkey.
This is the first.
What?
We saw his dick already.
Meredith, this is the first
sex scene we are getting in this movie.
Meredith, you said he's going to fuck that turkey. And I was like, nah. No, no way. That's ridiculous. He might fuck the old lady. He's fucking this turkey. Oh, my God. He's coming on the sandwich. Oh, my God, Meredith. I can't. Oh, there's so much drippage. Oh, God. Oh, my. I can't. What did he just say? I don't care. Oh, my God. Oh, God. He really. What is this? He's putting the mayonnaise on top of his cum.
Okay. There we go. And I didn't forget the mayonnaise.
I still. Can't believe that was the first sex scene of the movie.
Oh my God.
I loved it.
We had an emotional day.
Yeah.
For sure. So because of that movie,
yes.
We decided to have this mini episode.
Yeah, we need to understand porn better. I don't feel like especially
specifically that porn.
And specifically the history of what the porn industry has become, how has it become this like giant, you know, huge business?
Yeah.
And like still with abuses, absolutely. But also like genuinely, you know, I think it is trying to do better, especially for its workers and its,
right.
And create legitimate careers,
yeah.
A lot less like slut shaming,
yes.
and a lot more like empowering women to do something that they love to do. Like they just fucking love their jobs.
I also think, you know? We went into this whole experience thinking that we had like an assumed idea of what porn stars were like.
Yeah.
We've watched documentaries about cam girls. We know sex workers. Like we felt like we were super informed. And this movie made us really rethink who are the people who make porn.
Right.
And so what I ended up doing in a post-panic attack emotional moment is go to Amazon. And I bought a book written by the star of that movie,
yes.
Eddie, who's our villain.
Yes.
And by the writer of that movie, Joyce Snyder, who is a woman. Writer, producer of that movie. And she went on to produce two more Raw Talents.
Yes.
Raw Talent 2, Raw Talent 3. And then proceeded to be in the erotic film career and erotic magazine career for the next 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I believe still is.
Yeah. Mistress Pussycat.
I'll start with Joyce Snyder because I feel like that's a good opener compared to the other one. So, so Joyce Snyder wrote a book, which you found online and I proceeded to immediately buy it, called Mistress Pussycat, Adventures with Submissive Men in the World of Femdom. Here's a clip of Joyce Snyder talking about her book on a radio show out of Ocala, Florida. Woo woo, Florida people.
I mean, the book that you hide under the covers or something.
Oh, I love this book.
You will read it and you will say you never read it. Mistress Pussycat is the name of the book. Adventures with Submissive Men in the World of Femdom. And it is written by our guest, Joyce Snyder. Good morning, Joyce. How you doing?
Good morning, Larry.
I love your voice already. I'm already submissive.
Well, he's a fan.
I'm already submitting to you. Is this a memoir? This is your true story?
It's a exposé written in the form of a memoir so that it's not dry. It's more absorbing because I'm taking the reader on a journey. I knew nothing about femdom, which is female domination, as it is called in popular culture, before I began editing a magazine with an audience of submissive men.
When was it? When was this released? Out of curiosity,
it was released 2015.
Oh wow! So this is a fairly recent book.
So she wrote this book when she was in her 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is like from the perspective of a woman that's had pretty much a full career at this point.
Yeah.
So she's sampled it all.
And I mean, that's something that she kind of vaguely goes over in the book is like, I've done all these things. But it's only a few sentences where she really mentions her career in erotica. And then you explore basically her finding her sexuality through being a femdom.
Okay.
But she is such a fascinating woman.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. She's super problematic. She's a white woman in her 60s.
Yeah.
Who lives on the Upper East Side. But she still has lived a life very different from most white women in their 60s because of her exposure to erotica. And while she's definitely still a slut shamer, it's in a very different way than you would imagine.
Wow.
A bit. Yeah, she can be.
So why? What is different about it?
Okay, so what happens in this book is it basically starts out where she is working as a copywriter for an erotic legs magazine. So it's a magazine that has to do with men that have fetishes about legs and stockings and fishnets and blah, blah, blah.
There is a thing for everyone.
For everybody, right? And she discovers that basically a lot of her readers enjoy dominant women. So she starts doing quote unquote research on dominant women and then basically starts participating in the lifestyle.
Okay.
Going to workshops about being a dominatrix, going to conventions, going on FetLife online, setting up an account.
So she does identify as a dom. Like
she does eventually. So it starts out as research and then she realizes like she qualifies herself as like a cat lady. She's a spinster. Okay. She's never been in a relationship that she liked. She thinks that men are generally all garbage. And most of the men that she dates normally in this book, not the submissive men, do treat her very poorly. And I think that's an age thing.
Yeah.
Right? She's dating men also in their 60s, and they tend to treat her as badly as you would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to the point where they're like, they see her she has plastic surgery and is like proud of it and she looks very good for her age. And
well, that's another thing is like dating, if you are in the sex industry dating, like I'm sure a lot of men have these preconceived notions of what type of woman you will be. And then you end up being like much more complex than that, obviously.
Well, and definitely one of the things that she does on these dates with normal people is not tell them about her career.
Yeah.
She tells them that she's in publishing.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then the minute it comes out, of course, it's something where they like shame her for it.
Wow.
This is just an example of like, this was the dating life that she had like resolved herself to.
Okay.
So this tells the story of Glenn, who's this guy in his early 70s, father of grown children and had been divorced for at least a decade. He was a former financial type and now in consulting.
Standard New York bro.
Standard. it says, okay, so I greeted Dan, who was well turned out in a navy blue double-breasted blazer and charcoal slacks. His hair was natural gray, blah, blah, blah. But when Glenn began to chit-chat, things quickly went downhill. Starting with current events, he zeroed in on Tiger Woods' cheating scandal, the predominant media morality play at the time. Leaning towards me, he offered this comment in the affaire du jour. She's also very pretentious, which is sometimes very fun. Tiger Woods has a big dick. I hear his girlfriend says it, and he likes anal sex. I offered a feeble my in response before he went on to discuss politics. I've thankfully blanked from my memory his exact comment, which had something to do with the president along these lines. You know, Glenn, I hear enough about politics and current events. I'd like to know more about you. And then Glenn goes on to talk about his career. And then she says, I live with three cats. And he said, that's got to be a handful. She says, it's very easy. And then she says, except I'm worried about one cat who has a stroke. And he says to her, don't say you're worried. Say, I have a concern. I have a concern for my cat who has a stroke or had a stroke.
What?
And she said, I'm not just concerned. I'm really worried. And he said, but that's negative. You can't be negative.
What?
So he's telling her what to do. So this is her representation of the men she's dating.
Yeah.
Men in their early 70s who are, as you would imagine, they grew up in the 70s and believe that this is how you speak to women.
Ugh.
So no doubt
baby
that she
boomers
would go towards femdom.
Gross.
And what's fascinating about this book, and then she goes to proceed. She proceeds on to try out different kinds of domination. So there's pony play, where you ride a man like he's a pony,
right,
and you pull him by his dick. There's like houseboy, which is offensive in its own way, but you have men come over and do your housework for you or pick up your dry cleaning or whatever. There's just general like humiliation, which is where you tell them they have a tiny penis and whatever. You make them wear girls' panties.
Right.
She tries all of it.
Right.
Openly.
Yeah.
And she's like, can see empathetically why these men like what they like. And it makes her feel empowered. But at the same time, while this is happening to her, she is really good at commenting and recognizing the subtlety of how these men are controlling her from the bottom.
Got it.
So even though they're submissive men, she'll have a session with them where she's like dominating them. And then after they're like, well, you didn't do it right. You should do it like this.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Or the amount that they're like needy and demand things and they like beg her, or they'll call her 20 times a day and like beg her for them to come or whatever she's withholding. And she'll be like, it's really humiliating, but then they go on, or it's really annoying.
Right.
But then they go on to explain, oh, well, begging is part of my fetish. And she'll be like, it's also like exploitive.
Yeah.
She's like, and she ends up finding someone to be with.
And like, and scary.
And well, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like that you require this instant gratification and I'm not into, providing that. Like I have
a
life.
I mean, she's in her 60s, so she's very good about setting off her boundaries and like, and protecting herself. But
right.
She's also emotionally distant from everyone around her. And I'm sure that has something to do with her long partner career. And she ends up finding someone who like fills her needs, but that's literally it. She like fills her sexual needs and that's the end of their relationship. And she has a relationship with a variety of men. A lot of them are unfaithful to her, you know, whatever. So even though she's in this dominance thing, she's still suffering from the same stuff. And she's pretty aware of it, but she also, the way she writes it is in this kind of like, but this is what it's like to be a woman.
Yeah.
You know, she's very resolved in that.
Well, also I feel like she probably, does she think that she's probably going to change her dating patterns at this point in her life?
No.
You know, like probably not.
But she's very much like, I have my apartment with my cats and I'm not moving and I'm not moving in with anyone and this is my life.
Yeah.
I don't want to have kids. I don't care.
Yeah.
And she comes off as very powerful and in control.
Right.
But there's a little sadness to it in that she is resolved.
Yeah.
That she couldn't have these things because of her career and her life choices.
Right.
That it's unavailable to her. And now she's like too good for it anyway.
Right.
So that's fascinating knowing that she wrote Raw Talent.
Right.
Because you have a woman in Raw Talent.
Yes.
Who's definitely dumb.
Yes.
Who definitely is in control.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, the industry fucks her over.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's insane.
And she still gets, there's still a power play against her.
Yeah.
And then she's still always, she's never top dog. She's still reporting to someone else who is her husband or co-producer, whoever that guy is.
Yeah.
I can never remember. He was like such a minor character.
Oh, but the
like,
French guy.
Yeah, but yeah. Clearly like there's some sort of performance between them anyway. Mm-hmm. And he's in charge of her and she's mm-hmm. in charge
he
of.
He has all the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, and it almost feels like her bitchiness and her dominance is not that it's being forced, but it's created because of her environment.
Absolutely.
I have to be a bitch to yes. get things done. Yes. I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Which
is probably generally true in general.
No. Yeah. I mean, anyway, but then we move on to another perspective.
Yes.
So now I've read this book called Raw Talent, named okay. after the movie.
Okay.
It was written after the movie came out.
Okay.
And it's the memoir of Jerry Butler, our main character, of Eddie. Here's a clip of Jerry Butler talking on a podcast about his movie and the subsequent book.
Let me tell you, a lot of people with the porn business, a lot of the old timers that are my age and older, they cannot adapt to where the society has gone. So a lot of people I really know, they refuse to... to text. Even Joyce Snyder, she won't even text. She won't use her cell phone, and very limitedly. I mean, it's almost like a rebelliousness, you know. So I find myself in that category. So anyway, she told me a little bit about you, and no, she mentioned that at the time when I spoke to her, she mentioned that you were interested in doing some sort of a piece about the movie that she made. You know, that was her signature movie, Raw Talent. Which was like, you know, one of the top movies that I was in. And word goes that people thought I, you know, was written about me, but apparently it wasn't written for me, but I fit the bill because it was a really all about my life. And then I wound up writing a book about my life that was a very successful book, not financially, but it was successful in 1988 called Raw Talent. And I named it after the actual movie. And
does he explain like kind of why he decided to write the memoir?
So
a little bit.
Apparently,
I'm interested. It's intriguing to me that like he got a porn made with Joyce, right. And then also, do we know what their relationship was at all as the writer and
barely?
Okay,
barely. My understanding is that from what he wrote in his memoir, he wanted to make a movie about his life as a porn star.
Okay,
so this movie is based off of his life,
right?
And that the production company and the director had Joyce be the writer.
Okay. That's very honest then.
Mm-hmm.
I find, and like, yeah, like obviously the story itself is entirely problematic and he is a problematic character, but yeah. I also do find that I've fucking mad respect to a dude that like tells a story exactly how it is and also doesn't portray him as the ultimate hero.
Well, here's the thing though. I think the movie does portray him as the hero because this book portrays him as a fucking hero.
Oh, it does.
A hero and a victim. I'm the victim of all these terrible right. things and I made the best of it. And like
right.
he 100% is like, I'm a victim of circumstance.
Right. Right.
And that, all of these terrible things that happened to me where none of it was my fault.
Right.
Where there's an argument of participation. In
right.
here. So now.
Well, then Joyce wrote the porn itself.
So that's what's interesting
yeah.
about his life. Let me just get into his life story
yes.
because I think we can start correlating some
yes.
things. So he starts out talking about he grew up in basically Coney Island.
Okay.
Okay. So he's a Brooklyn guy who has this very. And this is him writing when he's older, writing backwards, but he has this very abstract sense of his sexuality.
Okay.
Like he was turned on by inanimate objects. He masturbated when he was like 5 or 6. He was like very sexually active.
Okay.
And would like hump things and get in trouble. And also had an extremely weird relationship with his father that he justifies back and forth. So he had this inappropriate relationship with his father where his father like was very cold and emotionless to him, but at the same time would like let him watch adult films when he was like
right.
8 or 9.
Weird. Yeah.
Right. And like didn't hug and like he would cry and he'd be like, men don't cry. Classic toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
While being sexually inappropriate.
Right.
Okay. And then you have, and so then he, as he grows up, he gets really, really involved in hockey. He almost went pro.
Okay.
At one point he breaks his leg.
Not ninja, not. not karate.
No, but I mean, it is a lead to him being very athletic.
And I wish he was a dojo master or something.
Oh, I know. But he identifies karate. He writes all the time, not karate.
Hockey.
He writes all the time, hockey is a man's sport. It's what real men do. And he is so, his proclivity for violence is like, he has no qualms about it.
Okay.
Men fight in hockey. It's good for us to punch each other. Like, anytime I have an issue with a man, I'm going to hit him before I have a conversation.
Oh, wow.
His
okay.
concept of masculinity is so actually yeah, it is. Sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad. And he loves his dad so much.
Yeah.
And you can tell that this was a severely abused relationship. Yeah. But he has no way of conceptualizing that.
Right.
So, like, he's not saying that in the book. I'm just reading it.
Oh, yeah.
And going, fuck, man, your dad was a fucking piece of shit.
Right.
And you can say nothing but nice things about him. And yet underneath, you're telling these stories about the terrible things your dad right. did to you. So the book is not written well.
Right.
But he's very honest and genuine.
Yeah. Okay.
And I believe the stories that he's telling.
Right.
I don't think he's made anything up. To the point where he's telling stories about things he did to women and he was relationships with. And I'm like, oh my God, you raped her.
Yeah.
And even though he's not saying I raped her, he's basically saying it.
Yeah.
So it's very honest.
Yeah.
And very fucked up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't uncomfortable. But
does he not show any remorse?
No.
For what he did
no,
to women?
No, because most of the time, the reason he did it to them is because they were doing something terrible to him. He's the victim.
Right.
They should have expected him to react that way. Right. Okay.
That's
so anyway,
insane.
So he grows up. He doesn't go to college, but even though he wants to play hockey, it doesn't work out for him. So he starts doing acting.
Okay.
Then he has a short period of time in his acting career where he's actually at, it's not the Stadler School, but it's a very good acting school.
Okay.
And what's happening to him while he's at this acting school, or at least the way he portrays it, is that everyone he works with is homosexual and they're all forcing him to have sex with them.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do believe that.
Yeah, you know? A little bit.
Right.
My
like I'm sure.
Feeling.
I'm sure. Yeah, like I obviously, like I don't. You know, it's like I wasn't. Like we do, just like
we don't know what
currently.
That's like. We have
currently
no idea.
Now. Like, and you don't want to like victim like shame even
you don't
a guy
victim shame.
Who is clearly a perpetrator of
no.
the same terrible shit that happened to him. But I do genuinely. Like, I bet, I'm sure there's also probably some misunderstand. Like, it's more like a power dominance thing in the sense that, like.
Let me read some. These I actually marked up.
I'm sure there's, like, some sort of dominance thing in the sense that, like, he honestly maybe even felt like there was no other option for him to become famous if he didn't do, like, submit to.
Well, that's part of what
he said.
To
the advances of some of these.
So the name of the chapter that, like, quickly wraps up. How it was for him to be at this acting school was Among the Wolves.
Okay.
So, and this is how he describes the men that he works with, right? Charlie was a homosexual, but I figured there was no harm in being his friend. I was naive enough to think that as long as I kept my zipper up, there would be no problem. Besides, he wanted to help my acting career and he seemed lonely and I felt sorry for him.
Right. Yeah, because.
So he's already like, you're a less than me.
Yes.
Because you're homosexual.
Right.
Right.
And also, well, I mean, because, yeah, okay, continue.
No, it's okay.
I would say it's like, it
here
is
we
that,
go,
like,
here we go.
There is that toxic masculinity to that in the sense that, like, homosexuals are all want to have sex with you.
Yeah.
If you're gay, they want to have sex with every man. Like, that's fucking moronic.
I mean, and that's basically how he defines all of the homosexuals that he worked with, is that they all were chasing after his dick and he felt harassed. And there is one point. Okay. Yeah. Here's one. I was surprised to hear from a big agent named Michael. Before I knew it, he invited me to his posh apartment on Revere at 57th Street. Michael gave me the best advice I'd ever gotten from any guy trying to get down my pants. Okay, so he's already assuming that this agent is interested in that, which, to be fair, he was. He told me, I don't give a damn if you have to rob a bank, go to the neighborhood playhouse, which is this amazing acting school he ended up going to. I did. I saved all my money. He ended up going there. And then another night he goes out with Michael. He went out with Michael to see a boxing match, but knew that Michael, he's like, Michael didn't give a fuck about boxing and he spent the night trying to get me drunk. I was petrified that he was going to make his move on me. I had four Valiums in my pocket and started giving them to him, pretending I was taking them too. I'm hoping that maybe they'd calm him down, but he was still horny and he said he'd send me out on auditions. What the hell could I do? I went to bed with him that night and I sucked his damned cock. Who's responsible for this situation? It's difficult to say.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to say.
Yeah.
Do I think that he was exploited? No.
Yeah.
I think that he decided he had no choice.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. There's definitely a power play at.
Sure.
Happening
there's a
here.
Power play happening. But I think that this guy, Michael, probably made it perfectly clear what his intentions were.
He probably had every opportunity to say no. If he gave
the guy drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I mean about the honesty and how much he doesn't see his own, like, I don't want to say stupidity, but like he has such a limited perspective.
Yeah.
There's another, let me see what else I bookmarked here. Oh, the way he talks about Ron Jeremy. Well, let me put it this way.
Wait, real quick question to go back. So when he was in the acting school, he was not doing porn at all.
No.
Okay. So that was before. So these men that he was meeting, like, had no.
Were getting him legitimate acting jobs.
And so they had no understanding. Like, they didn't understand him as, like,
as
fully
an
a sexual
star. Not
object.
At all. Not okay. at all. He put that upon himself.
Okay.
So then he ended up doing straight porn.
Okay.
And then he got into the business, and part of it too was he started getting addicted to cocaine and the business was feeding him being cocaine. I don't think he ever had his own apartment. He was constantly staying with people.
Okay.
So despite having a job that gave him money, he never like was solid, right?
This is, these are all things that were explored in the porn. This is insane.
But what's crazy too is it really represents, like, it's obvious to me you've had a really abusive relationship with your parents because you are a type A of somebody who lives an abusive life.
Right.
And yet, like, he can't possibly blame his mother for a lot of things. His mother was like emotionally unstable, all these things, never loved him, never hugged him. But his dad is a saint.
Every fucking asshole man in the world blames their mother for all their problems.
And what's crazy is.
And not to say that that's not 100, like, that's wrong. But to think that you are like, it is. That kind of toxic masculinity in the sense that, like, the impression that women are creating a problem rather than.
And you know his mom was being abused by his dad.
Yeah.
And you know his mom was, like, having her own issues and trying to deal with her son who's going, you know, like.
It's
anyway,
fascinating.
Throughout the entire book, he spends whole chapters talking about guys that he's idolized.
Right.
His hockey coach, who on a trip, like on an away trip to go to a hockey game, brought a hooker home to have sex in the same hotel room that the boys Jesus were Christ. Staying in. His hockey coach is a saint and an idol and taught him all these amazing things and was a real man. And he watched, pretending to be asleep, he watched his hockey coach have sex with this hooker and was like, I knew that's how a real man has sex.
Wait, he had sex in the room with the
boys,
like in the same room.
Yeah.
That is insane.
So to me, I feel like
that is truly insane. Like,
as I read this,
it's already like bad if he decided to do that, if he had his own separate hotel room. But to do that in the same hotel room is truly crazy. God, people are.
So this man's
world has come such a far, far way. God.
I know. So as he continues this book, every man he encounters who's not a homosexual, he idolizes.
Right.
And he'll write pages and pages about how they're good men, despite writing things that are obviously bad behavior.
Yeah.
Like, apparent to anybody who's reading it. It's incredible. And then when he talks about the women in his life, they get a paragraph.
Yeah.
And most of the time, if he talks about them for more than a paragraph, it's all the things they did wrong to him. It's fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it is so genuine.
Yeah. And you could, like, so, it's really that, like.
I'm not sympathetic to him, but it's so, like, his blinders are so intense.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. I wanted to get to another part just real quick. Oh, well. Okay, so as he goes, he continues to idolize men and just hate women. Of course, this carries on into his porn career,
right,
where he sees these women as objects often. Although it's funny, his co-stars, he definitely talks about them with a manner of respect and professionalism, okay, unless they do something to him.
Okay.
If they've done something to him, like his co-star in this movie that he like
the blonde
had the rape scene with. No, the Caroline
character.
Yeah. I marked what he said about her. And he writes about Randy West, who we've seen in movies. Right. He writes about Hypatia Lee, who we've seen in movies. He's worked with all these people. So when we go to watch these movies, he has like an index of who they are and what they were like, which is kind of cool. Here it goes. Okay, so the redhead, Caroline. So he wrote about, this is all he wrote about her. Lisa DeLue is her name.
Okay.
Lisa DeLue is an abundant, extreme personality. Since I'm pretty extreme too, we were always warring. For some reason, I also found her to be sexy, no matter how much of a prima donna she was. The way he talks about women is so awful. No matter how demanding she was, Lisa transformed from a big, bold, untouchable landmark into a flesh and blood woman when my dick was going in and out of her. In Raw Talent, the character she played was a bitch supreme, a porno producer who wrecks my character's career in soaps. Our mutual dislike for each other worked to our advantage. In the story, her character, Carolyn, forced me to fuck her, but Lisa was upset about my uninvolved pumping and my coldness. She even started to cry. But Lisa didn't understand that I was fucking her in character.
Yeah. Wow.
I was fucking her in character. I wasn't abusing her or being a terrible co-star.
Wow.
Right? But at the same time, like, he writes some stuff that's like, she was a professional, she was wonderful, she always showed up smelling good. Like,
yeah.
But it's obvious that, like,
that he was also like terrified of
women.
Well, also like scared. Like, she played a powerful character, right? So he's clearly afraid of any woman powerful with power. Woman.
Yeah. So, okay. My final judgment, and I read it all the way through, and it basically gets to the point where he found the woman of his dreams who changed him forever, and now he doesn't want to do porn. And as when the book was written, she had been married to her for like a year. But he's like very ashamed of his career because she's pure and has never done porn.
Oh, God.
But the way he qualifies her is like, her name is Lisa as well. He's like, I never thought I would have someone as beautiful as Lisa. He doesn't talk about her intelligence or her kindness or anything like that. He just thinks she's beautiful, and he feels what he loves from her is that she holds him.
Right.
Which is just, I mean, the fetal recrudescence or whatever that has to do with that, and the not love from your mother. Right. Like, whew. I feel like from reading this, I would guess if we were to give this to a psychologist, the psychologist would say that he's a repressed homosexual.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think that the way he fawns over men,
yes,
his really, really defunct dealing with masculinity, the fact that he had gay sex but always acted like it was forced.
Yeah. Well, and also the fact that he...
Or repressed bisexual or whatever. Right. But,
yeah, I think he probably has he has a very distinct idea of gender roles.
Yes.
And that you can't be masculine and a homosexual.
Exactly.
So it's like... He
has to be masculine. That's his life goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So he built these like binaries that he just couldn't tear down.
He can't get out of, because his love for women is so limited.
Yes.
It's really like not only an object, but just an object that always hurts him.
Right.
And to me, as I read through this and he got to the end and he's happy with this woman and he doesn't even care about having sex with her. He just wants to be held by her, which is like, oh my God, what an Oedipal complex. Right.
Yeah.
To me, it says... And also from what we've watched in it. So I want to get back to the movie, but just to conclusion of this book, this is a broken, broken human being.
Right.
Who actually found some peace in the adult film industry, but because he was a man, he got to abuse everyone around him.
Yeah.
So we have two totally different things.
Yes.
We have Joyce, right, who's resolved in her role as a woman.
As a dom.
As a dominant woman. But in her role that she's never going to be loved correctly because she's a woman.
Yeah.
And we have Jerry Butler, Eddie in our film, who is constantly striving to be a man when in reality his definition of a man is fucked up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but what fascinates me about this movie is that Eddie... doesn't mention a situation where he rapes a woman in charge of him.
Right.
It's usually like his girlfriend and someone who's below him.
Uh-huh.
Which tells me that Joyce or the someone decided to make... Because he is being abused by other men.
Yes. Yeah.
So I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, there was
definitely. Did they do that? Like, did they want to represent him being abused, but they couldn't have homosexual sex?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it was a woman. And now this is a screenplay where a woman is abusing a man being written by a woman. And for us, obviously the effect that Jerry Butler wanted to have was for Eddie, the main character, to really express his rise above abuse.
Right.
But for us as women watching this movie, we did not get that at all.
No.
Like,
well, and I will say though that we were accessing this movie until the rape scene.
Yeah, we were.
So
you're absolutely right.
So I will say that if they were trying to market this movie to mixed genders, I think that that having a woman write the story, you know, helped. Like we had true passion for these characters until that happened. And I mean, I still had passion for these characters after it happened. That's why it was like
I went on to read books. I mean, you know,
that's why it was such an extreme reaction to a rape scene. And,
it's complicated. 'Cause I thought to myself, if this movie had been made where he was raped by a man or where he raped a man who was in control of him,
right,
would I feel as violated? And the reality is I should.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it doesn't matter if it's a homosexual rape. Like, is it defined correctly?
Well,
like,
the same,
no.
And it's the same toxic masculinity has men rape women. It doesn't fucking matter.
I also was curious as to why did Eddie have to rape anybody?
Yeah.
Because his book is so concerned with being a victim.
Yes.
Why rape anybody at all?
Yeah.
Your character could have maintained his line, which gives me, I don't know, like, was he looking for some kind of validity, some kind of like, if I can't be powerful in real life, I'm going to be powerful in this movie, like, which kind of explains the karate now that I think about it.
That's what I just now I'm like, now that you're explaining to me, I'm shocked that he did hockey, but it also kind of makes sense in the sense that, like,
the violence
of it, mm-hmm. the show of masculinism,
yeah,
like, in the film itself.
I have to say, Meredith, I'm going to give you these books.
Okay,
listeners, read them.
Yes,
because even though if you liked our second episode, read these books.
Yeah.
Because first off, they're about sex workers.
Yeah.
And they're fascinating. But it's less about... Joyce Snyder's book is actually very well written. She's a writer. It's been her career for forever. It's very well written. It's funny. It moves a little slow, but whatever. Jerry Butler's book moves fast, is terrible writing. But they both are very open, honest portrayals of two complicated human beings without either one of them knowing they're complicated.
Right.
So it's almost like pulling the curtain aside and being able to see like the raw ripped apart version of people. I couldn't put them down.
Amazing.
They were fascinating. There were parts I skipped. There were parts that disturbed me. There were parts where I like threw the book and was frustrated. Both of them.
Right.
But it is like, I feel so much different about porn and sex workers after reading these two books.
Yeah.
Not that I'll ever stop watching porn.
Right.
Not that I don't, but like, I never thought I would get to a point where I cared about the creators as much as I do right now.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, they're real people. And I think like, and I think that it is hard to remember that sometimes when you're watching porn, because it is so easy to make objects out of them, which is like.
And I think I make assumptions about the women in it and that they either love doing porn and they're totally level with it.
Yeah.
Or that they're burying themselves off. And they're just doing it for the money and that they've become cold. And I think most often it's somewhere in between.
Absolutely.
Which I think allows for them to be exploited even more.
Yeah.
And that didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
And the way I feel about male sex workers, I never would have considered how much I think masculinity and homosexuality is a play in adult film.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I will say that's the thing is like the old, you know, we're so like as society becomes more woke.
Right.
And there's you know, more and more concepts of gender roles and masculinity, femininity, and also just, I don't know, like that people, and also more acceptance of mental health issues, right?
Yeah.
That there is so much of this stuff that people didn't even know how to identify that were happening to them.
Right, like he didn't have words.
He did, yeah.
For what was happening.
Exactly.
To him.
There was
the only role he knew was the one.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's something that will definitely, I would love it if we could like even do another mini episode where we interview a sex worker and see like.
I've already found a male porn star.
Yeah. Like I would just love.
That we could talk to.
I would just love to know kind of, you know, if this is like still as, I'm sure, 100%, I'm sure this still happens, especially because these motherfuckers have not died off.
No.
You know, it's like.
No, he's still alive. They're both still alive.
And I'm sure they have. And like you said, Joy Snyder, like she, you know, if she was 30 years younger, she would be having a much different career and possibly could still find love and acceptance and like, and have an understanding of like a wider understanding of the types of relationships she could have.
We're not even going into race because this is an adult film world back in the '80s where it was entirely white.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So like once you introduce you know, that's a whole nother facet we're dealing with now.
Right.
Because the biggest porn search out there is interracial.
Yes.
Teen and interracial.
Yes.
Which is so much different than the porn we're watching.
Yes.
Like, whoo, oh yeah, fuck,
that comes with its own fucking problems. But I'm just, I am, yeah, I'm curious. It is interesting. It's just,
I think,
fuck.
It's,
yeah,
I think we can learn so much about television and movies and the way we define our relationships and all this stuff about what is sexual assault and what is masculinity and what
porn.
Is I think porn really helps us. I think porn is so important.
Hashtag porn will save the world.
Hashtag porn could save the world. It's not right now. Right now it's making bad people worse. Yeah. But I think
there definitely needs to be like
humanity in the worst parts of porn.
Yeah.
Like, look, we watched a porn with a rape in it, and I feel like old us would have walked away and been like, we just can't deal with this.
Yeah.
But by, like, digging into it, like, I don't know. I feel enlightened.
Yes. I feel
good.
Do
you feel that way, too?
I feel great. I feel great today.
I do feel to have, like, some closure after that whole rape situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't feel like I need to take a shower right now.
Yeah, which was how we felt last time. Yes. Not to say that we forgive anyone, but I think we have a better sympathy for humanity, kind of.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah.
It's been a wild ride.
Thanks for sharing all that information with me.
You're welcome.
Caitlin, I'm excited to read the books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, also, we now have like an index about what Jerry Butler said about adult film stars. Ron Jeremy has written a number of memoirs, too, that I want to get and read.
Oh, wow. I didn't even. God.
You know what it
is? Crazy.
You know what it is about? At least these two books that I read about, or I've read some things about, like a blog by a sex worker, is how they talk about things like the normalization.
Yeah.
Like I went in for an anal sex scene and I was feeling really shitty that day, literally, ha ha ha. But like the way they talk about things that some people never mentioned in their whole lives.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, that's
because that's what we're doing.
That's the world we operate on.
That's the world we're living in, right? And it makes it, I can access those people better than I can access
100%.
A memoir written by even like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Because I don't recognize what she's saying.
Yeah.
But somebody writing about their day on a porn set, for some reason, I just connect with it. Yeah. Maybe that says something about me. Like, I don't know, you know, what is my memoir?
No, I think it's just that we're very honest people.
Yeah. I don't deny humanity.
No.
And humanity
sex is
sometimes
an extremely part of it.
Shit. Yeah.
If not, it is literally the like seed that creates life. It is the reason why human beings are the dominant species on this planet. And if we don't acknowledge that, discuss it, talk about all the fucking disgusting and beautiful things that come with it, then like, how are you even supposed to understand humans?
Absolutely. Everything is about sex except sex, right?
Yeah.
So we have to talk about it.
Exactly.
Ah, I feel so good.
Yeah.
I don't want to have sex right now, though.
No.
No, I'm not horny at all. I find at the end of every episode, I'm not horny in any. Well, thank you, Meredith. For
thank
this
you.
Mini episode. Hey guys, if you want to follow us or talk to us or do or share us, please share us.
Yes. Post it to your porn buddies.
Yeah.
You know?
You can find us in so many places. You can find us on Instagram at TWB Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at TWBD Podcast. But if you type in the other one will show up because search engines are great that way. You can find us at therewillbedrinkingpodcast.com. Or if you're lazy, you can type in morebanana.com. And we're right there on the front mm-hmm. page, along with our most recent episodes and all the other creators that we work with. There's a bunch of great women-centered shows that deal with sexuality and even movies and everything.
Yeah, if you like our voice, you'll like our podcast.
Oh, you're going to love that.
Network.
Exactly. And you can reach out to us at twbdpodcast@gmail.com or DM us or whatever.
Yeah.
We're here for you. We want to hear from you.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have any interesting reads, we should like look into.
Yeah.
If you're a sex worker that has something that they want to talk about with us.
Please.
I mean, while we're doing this porn format, we're also just like willing to talk about anything to do with sex. So
Absolutely. Please,
like, we want to talk about it if you are game.
Yeah, and I will have the links for, because these are, as you would imagine, these books are not at Barnes & Noble. You have to buy them on Amazon, and they're no longer in circulation, too. So you got to buy a used
one.
Yeah,
they're probably, I was going to say, they're not like, they're links. Not doing, there's not still printing these books.
No, but I'll have links to Amazon so you can buy them and that get on there. And maybe if we do a little surge, then one of the authors will come on our show.
Oh my God. Hell yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be amazing.
Okay, guys. We will see you next time for another porn.
Love you guys.
Love you.
See, what was our sign off?
Cheers to a happy
ending.